Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. Tonight, I am very honored to have Basil Fung on the show. Basil, it's a real pleasure and honor to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
It's truly an amazing musician. I've been listening to all the cues that he had sent me, and he exemplifies what I've talked about before in terms of a session guitarist being able to wear many hats and do different styles. Tonight you're going to hear some various different types of cues and cuts of him playing all sorts of styles of guitars, and great arrangements too. So, but first of all, let's start out a little bit about your background, where you came from and your influences.
Well, I was born and raised in Southern California. I grew up in Thousand Oaks, which is a suburb in Ventura County. It's about midway between Hollywood and Santa Barbara. Very sleepy, you know, little community, so not a whole lot going on as far as any kind of music scene, although later on, as I got old enough to actually go to bars and things like that as a teenager, sneak in. There were quite a few great players around town. But my influences were like pretty much any kid. I was actually exposed to Paul McCartney and Wings before I knew who the Beatles were. Mm-hmm. And that was because my brother actually won an album, you know, on a radio station. Mm-hmm. So it was a Band on the Run, great album. And so I first exposed to him at about 9. I didn't even start listening to the radio until I was about 9. And then I discovered the Beatles, and I was hooked on them. Of course, around 11, 12, I got into Kiss, perfect demographic for Kiss at that age. And so that was getting into harder stuff. And then as I matured, I discovered Zeppelin and Aerosmith and, you know, UFO and a bunch of, you know, great guitar players, a lot of influences like that, rock influences. But I actually asked for a guitar when I was 5. And the only thing that I used to watch Lawrence Welk with my parents every Saturday night, and immediately following Lawrence Welk, Hee Haw would come on. So I can only gather that that was probably what spawned me to ask for a guitar, is because, I mean, you rarely saw the guitar player on Lawrence Welk. If you did, it might be like about 4 bars, and that's about it. Back to the accordion stuff and the dancing. But Hee Haw was, you know, they open up with Pickin' and a Grinnin', and I just love that, you know. So I actually wanted to start taking lessons at 7 or at 5, but they sent me away and said, come back in a couple of years when your hands are bigger, because back then they didn't make guitars as small as they do now. Now they make half-size guitars and stuff. So I did. I came back at 7 and started taking lessons privately. And so by the time I was about 11, I had already been playing guitar for about 4 years, and I joined a band of high school kids. Of course, I was only 11, so I was still in, I guess, grade school at the time. And then eventually I started playing and starting my own band and stuff like that, finding other people that, were either at my level or better. Most of them were older, so I just ended up playing with a lot of older people, and I learned a lot, And that's one thing that I encourage, my students and stuff. I do teach, too, and always tell them to look for players that are better than you, because that just inspires you to want to practice more and get better,
No, that's
otherwise,
true.
If you're the strongest member of the band, then you sometimes get lazy. But if everybody else is sort of kicking your butt musically, it's just like it makes you just want to catch up,
Yeah, when you have that many people that are playing that are that much better, it's to me, it's like you're playing by the seat of your pants. You just have to keep up.
Yeah.
But it does bring out a lot for you, at least I found for myself.
Yeah, and it's great motivation. I mean, music is meant to be shared live, And that's the thing I sort of forgot along my journey is, I was writing for many years and not playing much live at all. But it's just like I realized recently that it's just in the past few years that, that's what's missing from my life is I'm not sharing this music in a live situation because, that's when magic happens. I mean, you take chances and, you make mistakes too, but that's when something really happens is when you get in a room with a bunch of other musicians, it's something that you can't, just come up with yourself. You can put all your great ideas down, but until you actually get in a room with other great musicians and play together, that's when the magic happens.
Yeah. There's an emotional part of it too, that when you play for an audience and they respond, there's that feedback that you get that reinforces it, and you can't get that.
But even if the audience is just the engineer or whatever,
that's true.
Just like, but the magic happens when you have great musicians and they're all putting their input in, they're putting their heart and soul into it. Mm-hmm. That's, you just can't do that on your own with overdubs,
That's true.
No matter how brilliant you are, it's not the same.
Well, let me play a clip to kind of show everybody where you're coming from. And this is an interesting one. It's a library clip. So it's AM-162 is the only name I know of it. Can you briefly describe what it was about?
I'm not even sure what this one is.
All right, let me play it for you, and then we'll talk a little. Because
I can talk about it after I hear it.
Okay, so there's some really. This is a nice cut. So this is AM-162. Here
all
we go. Now, one thing I'm going to mention is all tonight, you're just going to hear a lot of tasty things. That everything that you're playing on there is just like perfect. The tone, we got to get into what you were using in there because that...
Well, it's going to be a lot less glamorous than you think, so...
Oh, that's okay. No. You know, it's... No, I think that it's what you're... The sound that you're getting, both the slide guitar and that electric guitar, you're getting that bite to it.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Guitar players, I've found... Well, not... There's always exceptions to the rule, but most guitar players... that I know are kind of lazy. So what I mean by that is, at least this applies to me. Okay, let's say I'm lazy. How about that? I don't want to generalize and put everybody else in this category. But, you know, when you have to set up all this gear and mic it and get all these tones and stuff like that, especially if you're trying to crank out a lot of music as a composer, writing for TV and that kind of thing, time is money, and you only have so much time to deliver the product and that kind of thing. And I don't have a budget to hire a bunch of, great musicians. I'd love to. I wish I was in that position. But a lot of the stuff I do is there's not a lot of budget to work with in the front, so I have to do everything myself. So what I end up doing is, because of that and because of the fact that you may have to go back and completely rewrite the thing, or you may have to just fix a few notes or rewrite a section and you want to match the tones, and you can reamp everything, but then it might not be exactly the same as it was before, and then they might go, hey, your guitar sounds different. We liked it better before, you know. So what I end up doing is, for the TV stuff, I end up using a lot of plugins. And so everything you heard on there, with the exception of the acoustic guitars, those are mic'd. But all the rest of the guitars were probably one of three or four plugins. The ones that I use regularly were Podfarm 2.5 and from Line 6, or it was Amplitude 4 or 3 probably back then. That was a few years ago. Then I also, lately I've been using like the Scuffhem plugins, and also the Positive Grid, bias amps. So there's a lot of wonderful plugins out there. And I grew up in the era in the 80s with the big racks and the Bradshaw. I had a large Bradshaw system. And I had the Boogies. I was kind of sort of chasing Mike Landau's tone as much as I could back in the 80s, because I just love his tone and his feel and his playing. So I grew up with that, and that's... I miss that sound. Nobody's asking for that sound anymore, unfortunately, because I can still get those sound with a lot less gear now, because the gear is so amazing that they've got. I basically have three rigs currently. I have the Helix, which I'm real comfortable using, by Line 6. I have the Kemper, and I have a pedal board full of a bunch of Strymon, Eventide, and Wampler pedals and Friedman pedals and just whatever I can get my hands on, basically. It's constantly in flux. So even though you might see certain pedal on there one week, it might be gone the next week. But so I'm constantly changing my gear, but and using different things for whatever I feel they do the best. I don't really stick to any one thing. And for the stuff you heard there and a lot of the stuff that I write for television, I use plugins just for the ease of getting back to that exact sound. So all I will have to notate is what guitar, what pickup, maybe where the volume knob is if I don't have it up full. What pickup, what guitar, and that's all I really have to notate. And everything else is saved with the session.
Yeah, that's the thing. You can save the whole setting.
So, yeah, and that's the beauty of it, and that's the ease of it. I can save presets, too, and then go back to them and sort of call up my favorite preset, to start with, and then tweak it as I go.
Well, what amazes me about that clip is the regular guitar lead is the response, that treble pickup. I mean, that's that type of... bright sound, and when you were picking it, it got a certain character to it. Was that plugin's very responsive, because that I've only felt that myself more on an amp.
Well, that's the thing. Plugins have come a long, long way. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, the digital stuff, I've always sort of embraced technology and the digital stuff, but a lot of the plugins, they sound amazing, but they might not feel, it might not have felt amazing when I was playing it, but I know what I'm hearing in my head, so I don't, you know, I kind of put that on the back burner and just try to get what's in my head, get the sound that's in my head recorded, you know, and get the part and get the feel of the part and everything like that. You know, because as you do more stuff, especially if you're arranging it and composing it and and recording it and doing, you know, producing it all yourself, you kind of have to get out of the headspace of just, you know, I'm a guitar player. Now I got to change hats, and now I'm an arranger, I'm a composer, I'm an engineer, and I have to do everything, you know, because that's pretty much what kind of budget you're working with.
You do it all.
You have to do. You have to learn to do wear many hats. But by doing that, and by getting into headspace of being a composer and arranger, you really you have to make space for all the instruments. You know, these are all your ideas, so it's not like any one's more important than the other. It's like I only have this guitar to put my stamp on this. The whole piece is you. You know, so it's just like, you know, you gotta think how the percussion, you know, is going to work with the bass and how the keys are going to work and the guitars and everything's going to work with one another, you know, and if there's strings and brass and all that stuff too. You got to make it work together, so you have to leave space. And that's the one thing I learned as I started, you know, writing music for television and that kind of thing. It just really opens up your eyes to see, well, I can't play all these huge chords. I can't play, you know, a million notes a second because there's just not space for it. You know, everything else will be drowned out. So it's like, you know,
one thing I did notice in the clips is that space in the colors, the different guitars. Like, well, for example, this clip, which, well, let's go down the line what you're using. Okay, we were using plugins, but for the acoustic guitars, what were you using?
I've got a Martin. It's an Eric Clapton model. I used to have, actually that one might have been the one, I don't know how old that is, but I used to have a 1952 00028, a Martin. And that was a beautiful guitar, but there was a period of time where I quit music for about 5 years. And I sort of sold off everything but one guitar.
Oh, wow.
And moved away. then after that, I moved back. And then had to start over again, you know. But anyways, in the process, I sold that guitar. But in the process of coming back, my good friend Bob DeMarco is kind enough to sort of permanently loan me several guitars. So one of which is a 00028 EC model. It's an Eric Clapton model. So it's the same exact body style, everything, except this one has an Eric Clapton, you know, sort of signature on it. You know, beautiful guitar, and it's almost sounding as good as my old one, but not quite. It's a 2000 model, so it's getting older now, but it's nowhere near as old as the 52 was.
Then, what did you use on the electric for the slide and the lead?
Oh, so also he loaned me a microphone, a KM-184 Neumann. Which makes a huge difference, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's a beautiful microphone. And that's pretty much what I use on all my acoustics. It's a pencil-style microphone, condenser microphone. And basically, I just do that. I put one pencil mic on the acoustic and go to town.
Pretty close, or do you pull back?
It's about where the top horn, you know, the top horn of the guitar, it's kind of aimed about here, maybe about 6 to 8 inches back. Because I found that if you put it towards the hole, it gets way too woofy, or towards the bottom, it's too woofy. And if you put it towards the 12th fret too much, it's too thin. So I found right around here, just sort of.
So you just use a single mic?
Yeah.
As
a single mic. I mean, you can get great, wonderful tones if you want. But like I said, I don't have a... Well, one, I'm lazy. Two, I don't have a big mic collection. So I only had that one good mic. The other mics were all, you know, much cheaper quality and sound.
We have to turn them on to Dave Perlman and Perlman mics, right?
Oh, yeah, well, I'd love to get more mics, and, you know, I'd probably, you know, just leave them set up so I could just, you know.
But, I mean, in your studio, do you have the ability to pull the mics back and get more?
I do. I do, but not much because it's nothing fancy. It's just a bedroom with a lot of with a computer. Actually, the computer's in the hallway. I cut a hole in the wall and ran the cables through. But it's just a normal bedroom with monitors and a, you know, I've got, of course, tens of thousands of dollars worth of software and stuff and tens of thousands of dollars worth of guitars. But like I said, most of the time I don't even record the amps at home because
right.
it's just too noisy for, you know, other people around and you can't, you know, be cranking up your amp all night long, you know, even if you're the only one, you know, living in the house, there's bleed, you know.
Yeah.
Because I, like I said, it's just a bedroom, so.
Yeah. No, she was mentioning about Dave Perlman. He brought some of the mics for, we did a show, and we pulled the mic about 3 feet away from, I had a Martin, and it just was the sweet spot.
Oh, like,
3 feet away, you could hear everything clear, balanced. I mean, it was amazing. Both of our eyes is bugged out. When
yeah,
we heard it.
I keep it close because if I pulled it that far away, you'd hear the computer fans and the hard drives and other things like that, or the AC kicking on or something like that. So I keep it really close. That way, you know, I can either edit out if there's some hum from the AC or something like that, or if it's real, you know, critical, I'll just turn it off and sweat. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, like anything, but.
On that song, what did you use electric-wise?
Electric-wise, I probably used a combination. I mean, I don't remember what year that was. But my main guitar for a couple of decades was an Anderson drop top. It was a basswood body with a maple top and, I think, Palfera fingerboard.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably one of the guitars. I also have a Les Paul. It's an Epiphone, but I love the way the neck feels, and I replaced the pickups with Burst Buckers,
mm-hmm.
I think number ones or something like
that. Would
that
be the one powers. You would use for the slide?
It might be. I don't know. I sort of play whatever I can get my hands on. Like I said, my good friend Bob DeMarco, who I think he'd be great to get on this show, too, but he loans me, you know, he's got a huge selection of guitars and amps, and he loans me stuff, you know, if I need a 12-string or if I need a Rickenbacker or whatever, mm-hmm. I just go, hey, can I borrow that for a few hours or a couple of days? And he's always, sure, you know, so it's just like I have access to whatever, so I'm not exactly sure what I use there. As far as my guitars, I only own about 7 or 8 guitars. I mean, now, lately, I bought 3 of them lately, so now I own, like, 10, but so I'm always borrowing guitars, you know, and so I'm not exactly sure what is.
So you're using different things. No.
Yeah, whatever I can get my hands on, I love to play, you know, different stuff, you know.
Well, I'm going to play another clip, and this one is, it's got a very nice guitar lead. It's called Donuts.
Oh, okay.
And also I notice in it really, again, it. The way the guitar parts, the whole arrangement's put together is take a listen. And also you have like a chorus glossy, like a real glassy type of sound for the rhythm guitar.
Yeah, that's a drawback to my 80s rack days, you know, trying to get that lush 80s kind of chorusy tone.
All right, let me go ahead and play this one. And there's so many cues here, I got to find it. Where did it go? There it is. Let me play this, and then I want to talk a little bit about your... We discussed this a little bit on the phone, you leaving and coming back. So I want to get into that a little bit.
Sure.
Okay, here's Donuts. Thank you. just tasty.
So sweet.
Yeah.
Now, and that's plug-in suit, because you're getting so much sustain out of that lead.
I can remember what that was, because I actually went back and looked it up a few years ago. That's the Epiphone Les Paul, you know, neck pickup. So it's a Gibson Burstbucker, I think. Through the Pod Farm 2.5, there was a patch in there. I can't remember what it was called. It was something that referenced U2. And I took it and I took out the delay, you know, changed the delay settings and stuff like that and warmed it up a bit. I might have added some different compression or something to it. So that's that on the lead. And then the other one, if anyone's guess, it's either Pod Farm or Amplitude 3 with some chorus on it.
Is that still the Les Paul or is that another?
No, that would have been probably the Anderson, you know, mm-hmm. the Strat, which was a HSS setup.
Because that just gets that glassy type of sound. That's really nice.
Yeah, I just love that Strat-y kind of.
But that lead, I mean, the sound that you're getting, I mean, it gets just a little hint of breakup in it. It's very slight, but it gets that tone like you would get out of an amp.
Yeah, and that's an AC30 model.
AC30 model. That's a great sound.
But it's just like, I mean, that's the thing about plugins. I mean, if you just use the presets that come with it, they might not match what you're looking for, your playing-wise, but if you're willing to spend some time tweaking it just a little bit, you can get some wonderful tones, mm-hmm. you know. And so, like I said, I've always sort of embraced the technology and stuff like that. I've always wanted it to sound better, and so you make it sound as good as it can. And so what, it doesn't sound exactly like the real thing. If it sounds good, it's good. I mean, this is music we're making. It's not about the tools you use. It's not about the, the gear. If it works for you, use it. If it doesn't work for you, then go on with your quest. Mm-hmm. You know, keep mm-hmm. looking for.
It's about the result.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
In the end, it's about the music and how it moves you.
So, what compelled you to leave for 5 years?
I got to a place where, I don't want to blame anyone. It has to do with the choices I made. And I got to a place where I was really bitter and angry, and it wasn't healthy, you know. So part of it was, it's kind of painful to talk about, but part of it was just I needed to, you know, prove to myself I could do something else, you know, mm-hmm. for a living. Because it was just too stressful at the time. You know, mm-hmm. I wasn't making enough money to feed my family and take care of things. So I had to prove to myself that I could do something else. Along the journey, what I discovered was, you know, just because you can do something else doesn't mean that's what you should be doing with your life.
Right.
And I realized that if I can, you know, make a living doing what I love doing, taking the time off sort of got me back to the point to realize, you know, what is it that got me into music? I got into music because I loved music, and I picked up the guitar and because I loved playing guitar, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can get back to that place to where I'm doing what I love and I'm just finding the joy in it, you know,
mm-hmm.
None of the other stuff matters. I never got into music to be in the music business or to get rich or to be famous or mm-hmm. to, attract women or anything like that. I got into it because I loved music and I wanted to play guitar, you know. And so I got back to the place where I realized, well, what am I going to do? Wait till I'm 50 and then decide I'm going to, you know, quit what I'm doing, go back to music? I said, no, I gotta take that chance. And I had other friends that were really encouraging me to get back into it. And so after I moved away and moved back, I decided I got to do it, but I got to do it smarter. I can't just, you know, I'm not making a living just playing guitar and teaching. So I got to find something else to do. And that's when all my friends, you know, for years they've been encouraging me to write. But mm-hmm. it's just like sometimes you're a little slow, you know. So at 40, I started writing, you know, just before my 40th birthday. I got back into it and started writing with the encouragement of my good friend Bob, who I mentioned before. He helped set me up with the, you know, the computer and the software to get started, and I got back into it and started writing again. But this time for, you know, trying to write for a living, you know, because he had a library company, so I started writing for his library, and it's amazing what you can do when you're doing it just not because you have to, but when you find the joy. You get back to the place where you find the joy in what you're doing, and you're just grateful. I mean, that's when doors open. You know, that's when the opportunity to start playing again, to teach again, to write music for TV, and all that just sort of fell into place. I sort of did whatever I had to. I'd quit and, you know, tried to get some Microsoft certifications under my belt, and was doing IT support for those 5 years I took off. And so I was still doing a little bit of that on the side, but I was trying to work my way back into doing music, you know.
Well, let me ask you something. One thing you mentioned that was one of the reasons that you left was the stress and stuff.
Yeah.
And coming back to it, how do you deal with the stress now? Because I don't think a lot of musicians really know how to handle that.
Well, my whole career, I've sort of flown by the seat of my pants. And that's kind of how most musicians live. Unfortunately, I'm not good at business, you know, things like some people are, and I think that's true for a lot of musicians, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, something they should teach in music school a lot better than they do. Maybe they do now. I don't know. I haven't been been to music school lately. But that's something you can either learn it the hard way by making a lot of mistakes and losing a lot of money and, you know, Or you can get smart and sort of educate yourself, you know. Or you can just hire people that
you get people
know
you
that
trust
stuff.
To be,
yeah,
you know, doing that on your behalf.
Either
so you
do
can
it
be
or
musician.
Consult. You sure?
Of course.
And so there's many ways to get that under your belt. But for me, the time off, I just realized that if I can make a living and provide for myself and my family, then I've got nothing to be angry or bitter about. It's all about the choices you make that bring you to the place where you are in your life. You know? So I just decided I needed to do it smarter, you know. So I had to take my friends up. Most of my friends that were doing well is all because of they were writing. It's not because they were out there playing with, you know, such and such. It's they were writing, and the music you write can grow legs and can continue to pay you for years and years and even decades, you know. Mm-hmm. And even when you're gone, it can continue pay your estate, you know, or your family, or whoever you leave it to. So I realized that, and so that's when I said, well, maybe I better wise up and start writing, you know. So when I came back to doing music, I did that with that focus and just with trying to find the joy in the music, you know, and the playing, and not really worrying about the money. I knew that the money would come, you know, if I just found the joy, the doors open, you know, and you know, because who wants to be around someone who's miserable and angry all the time, you know, or sad and, you know, depressed? And it happens to all of us. We get beat up. We get knocked down. But if you can just find the joy in it and do it because you love it and for no other reason, everything else will work out. You know, that's just, I've just always believed that, you know.
Yeah. No, I think that's very true. When you can say, when you're looking forward to waking up in the morning to go do what you love to do, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, I mean, life is, you know, it's not about how much stuff you can acquire, you know, it's not about how much stuff you can trap yourself with, it's not about the trappings, it's about experiences, you know, and if you can create experiences in your life that, you know, that you can't buy, I mean, that's priceless.
Right.
So it's just like I've just tried to find things that make me happy, you know. And so the thing that I've sort of adopted lately is if I'm not having fun doing what I'm doing, I'm speaking musically.
Right.
I'm not doing it right, you know, because this is supposed to be fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I know that it's, the business side is not always fun, but the music side should be fun. It should be a blast. I mean, There's people that, you know, they dream of doing this, you know, what I do for a living. They dream of doing, you know, that kind of thing. And but they either will never do it because either they don't have the opportunity or, you know, maybe they don't have the whatever. Mm-hmm. The things just don't fall into place for them. But, you know, I just have a lot to be grateful for. And I got back to the place where I was just grateful, and that's when things, you know, were happening for me again. That's how I, you know, that's how doors open, is if you're grateful and you're just joyful in what you're doing, it just sort of spreads and people open doors for you. You know?
Right.
Full circle. It's,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The journey and came back to something that's better than was originally, probably.
Exactly. Exactly.
But look what happened. Yeah. You came back and you started writing, and that's a whole, there's the writing, the arranging, the producing, all of that part of that. Just made your guitar playing experience even more full and more.
Yeah. Yep, so, absolutely. And another thing, I mean, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I thought that would sort of put an end to my career as far as playing goes, too, because it initially started in my feet and I could barely walk because it was so painful. I thought that was bad. Then it moved up into my hands and I could barely play. It was really painful to play guitar. I couldn't even make a fist because my joints were so swollen. And of course, fortunately, you know, through a lot of prayer and just sort of bearing through it, it moved into just my thumb. So now I just have, you know, RA in my right thumb, and the rest of my fingers are fine, you know, and the rest of me is fine too. So I'm able to still play, and, you know, I just figure, well, when I'm not able to play anymore, I'll have to find something else to do. I can still write, you know, I can still write.
You'll
I
sing.
Can still, right. So it's just like I'm grateful for that, and so it's just like even through that, it's just like you get through it. But what that taught me, because that was several months, it really taught me how to become a better arranger and composer, because now I no longer had the facility that I had in my 20s or even my 30s. It's just like now I'm in pain when I play, so what I play, I really have to mean what I play, because it's painful to play.
Yeah.
So I better
gotta
say
make it
something.
Count.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Make it count.
What I play has got to count. You know, so you and that's the thing I struggle with. It's like all of us wanna, you know, it's fun to shred, you know, guitar players are just known for noodling, right? But you learn as you mature that music is not about how many notes can you fit into this little tiny space. You know, as you mature, it's like you got to say something with what you're playing, with the notes that you
right.
choose. You got to say something, you know, or create a mood or a feel, or even like a mini composition with your solo or with your whatever you compose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. It really helped me to become a better musician. The fact that I could no longer play, you know, like I used to play.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten a lot of my facility back, and I think I've maturity-wise, musically, I'm a lot stronger now. But I don't have some of the sheer speed and, you know, stuff that I did when I
don't
I was
know.
Younger.
I some of the you stuff know. You play in here, but you're more tasteful. You put it where you need it, but it's like it's there.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, let me. I'm going to play another clip. This one's called Stretchy Trousers. That kind of shows that funk influence that you have.
Yeah.
And great, great lead. And again, those real glassy guitars in the rhythm section. So here's Stretchy Trousers.
Thank you.
That's a great cut. And he was mentioning, I have to mention that you were telling me you played the bass on that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I picked up the bass at probably 12 because there were too many guitar players in town, so I figured I could probably get work as a bass player easier. And it worked out that way because I was playing in bars at 13 playing bass after playing it a year and a half or so. But and then I would play guitar and, you know, in my bands that, of course, didn't make any money. But I do that during the week and stuff like that. But for a while, I was playing a lot of bass.
That's a good bass sound. You got it. You nailed it. But I do want to mention, too, you had brought some stuff down. And I think you're using the Helix for this tour you're doing with Frankie Valli, if I'm correct?
Yeah. I just got the gig about 6 weeks ago. So far, we've done 2 weekends out, five total of 5 shows, and I'm leaving the day after tomorrow for 3 more shows in Florida. Then we're doing a couple of dates the following weekend in California at the Pala Casino, and then in Indio at Fantasy Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Back out the following weekend to 3 more dates in Florida.
Well, why don't you give us a little bit of, show us a little bit of what you've done with the Helix, some of the tones, and how you have it laid out.
The Helix, it's an interesting thing. I mean, I love the way it's really well thought out, because I use it sometimes just as an effects board. Sometimes I'll use analog pedals in it. For the Frankie Valli thing, I'm just using it for a wah-wah, a volume pedal, compressor, a touch wah, and I'm really not using any modeling at all. And then I plug I've got a Friedman Dirty Shirley pedal that I've got in one of the loops, so I kick that in when I need overdrive. And I also have a Wampler Tumnus Deluxe that I also use. But those go in 2 different loops in the thing, and then it goes into whatever backline they have. Lately it's been Fender, like reissue, 65 reissue twins. But it's kind of like I get whatever I get, and I guess if it's broken, I can always go straight into the, you know, front of house.
Well, show us some of the, you're not using all of this, but show some of the cool stuff, because when you were warming up, there was some interesting stuff.
Well,
these are
some church patches. I mean, I also play in church on weekends when I'm home, out in Newbury Park at a church called Living Oaks. And I've been there probably going on 13, 14 years now, you know, on and off. But, so these are real effects heavy, because a lot of times you're doing ambient part.
I just want to mention the Helix is direct in. There's no amp here. Does that wah model different wahs, like a Crybaby?
Yeah, there's about 12 or so different wah models in there. They've got Crybabies, Voxes, custom ones where you can, and you can, you know, some of them you have more control over selecting what, you know, what frequency, center frequency you have.
Mm-hmm,
or,
mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the beautiful thing about this is it's so versatile, but I also have a Kemper that I love, too, and I'm tempted to get a, you know, Fractal Audio AX8 or something like that, too, because I'd love to check that out. But they all work. I mean, they all sound wonderful. And it's just a matter of tweaking, you know, whatever you like to get out of it. And everybody has different hands and a different feel. So what patch might not work, you know, for you. With a few tweaks, you can get it to be just, you know, just like what you hear in your head, you know.
Yeah.
And so, but they all sound great. You know?
Now, I just want to mention he's using a Nash guitar. It's basically like a Tele.
It's a hollow Tele, and it's got two humbuckers, two wide range humbuckers in it.
Are those Lawlers. Fender humbuckers or
no?
Oh, those
they're
are
Lawlers. Lawlers. Yeah. It's an amazing this guitar. It's funny. I just picked this up about probably three or four weeks ago. My friend Bob again. I told him about what I was, you know, needing to get another guitar for the gig, and he said, "I got a guitar in mind that you might really dig." And of course, I fell in love with it. And then he told me how much he paid for it, and I go, "I can't afford that." So, but he made me such a good deal on the guitar that I couldn't refuse.
It's nice. It's got.
So I just fell in love with this thing. It sounds unlike any other guitar that I own, you know, being a thin line and two, having these wide-range humbuckers. They sound amazing. Because in the middle, I can get those Tele sounds, you know, like... Gotta kill some of these delays here. Now, in the back, it doesn't really sound like a Tele. Also doesn't sound like a standard humbucker either.
Yeah.
And then the front is mellow.
It's a little brighter than a normal humbucker.
It's way, way brighter than any of my humbuckers, but it's a really cool setup, really versatile, and you know.
Now I want to ask you just real quick, because you brought your older go-to guitar, if you
yeah.
could play the Luke.
Yeah, I've got a Music Man Luke 3 that's sort of been my main guitar for the past couple of years since I picked it up. But it kind of got knocked off the first spot just because, you know, one, this is newer, and I just love the way it sounds different. But the Luke is a lot of fun to play, you know, for more shredding stuff, you know.
Well, we're almost out of time.
Oh,
I wanted Judy just to play a little bit of it, and then
all right.
We'll talk about the piece taking us out. Oh, this is nice.
Now, yeah, this is one. This is a sort of one that it's a, I don't know, it's some kind of dealer reserve or some kind of special. It's, I think only 100 of these were made. It's actually a solid. Well, it's solid mahogany body, and it's a roasted maple neck. So,
now, you're using a standard type of a tremolo
yeah.
with no locking system. Is that a Durell self-lubricating nut?
It's whatever Music Man uses on here. It's actually, if you look closely at it, it's actually compensated. You can see how the grooves are cut differently.
Oh, wow, yeah, let me get it.
So, but this is a standard, you know, Music Man thing. I didn't do anything to the nut.
Mm-hmm.
I did talk to Steve Lukather's guitar tech at one of the Baked Potato shows, and he says he uses this Teflon powder. So I ordered some of it. They use it on pianos. It's some kind of Teflon powder. And I use that, or sometimes I'll go back and forth between that and Big Ben's nut sauce, you know, which is basically, I guess, like Vaseline and graphite mixed together or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I've used graphite. Yeah. I've used a number two pencil.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
works too.
So that's what's keeping it in tune. But it's still, there's still things you have to do, you have to know to sort of get it back in tune, like, you know. And so
it's got a great sound. It's really aggressive.
Yeah, and I actually changed the back pickup. It normally comes with a much more aggressive and powerful pickup. But I switched it out with this is a Seymour Duncan Seth Lover in the back. So I've got the two DiMarzios that came with it. I took out the transition pickup, and I put the Seth Lover in it. It wasn't potted, and so it was squealing. So I had John Carruthers heavily pot that for me, which is just putting wax around it, you know, dipping it in wax. So now it's great because I can use the back pickup for clean sounds, whereas the other one was just way too much output. It just too honking. But now this is a lot brighter, and I can actually use it for clean sounds too.
You know, are the two single coils potted too?
No, the two single coils are some kind of stacked.
Oh, they're
hum
stacked.
Canceling.
Okay.
Yeah, so those are supposed to be noiseless. It's whatever they use in the Loop 3. I'm not sure what those are, what model those are. But I know there's some kind of DiMarzio that are humbuckers. And then, of course, this thing has a boost in it. You can set it up to, I think, 15 dB, but I've got it probably somewhere around 6 dB. You can see how much.
That's significant.
So that's a push pot on the volume. It's really cool. So that's why I wasn't worried about how much output the back pickup had, because I can always kick that thing on and get plenty of output.
Oh, that is very, very... Well, so. I told you we'd go by fast. We're already out of time. What I wanted to do... go ahead and mention again where you're playing so people can see you.
Well, the two shows that we are doing somewhat locally are one at the Pala Casino on...
The listeners are everywhere, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, this weekend we're playing in Melbourne, Florida on Thursday, the 15th, and then the 16th and 17th will be, where is it, Hollywood, Florida, I think at the Hard Rock. Where, I could be wrong. I don't know where, but in Hollywood, Florida.
Oh, very cool.
I know that. I don't remember what the venue is. I could be mixing up dates. So... And then we'll be back in Florida 2 weeks after that to Clearwater, and I don't remember.
West Coast, that's close to my mom. But I better tell my mom, maybe she'll go.
But here we'll be playing the Pala Casino.
Fort Myers.
I think that was one of them. Yeah.
All right. I'll talk to you after the show.
Okay. But here in town, in California, we're playing at the Pala Casino, not this coming weekend, but the week after, I think the 20-something. And then we're playing at Fantasy Springs in Indio.
Okay.
And this is the Frankie Valli show, by the way.
Right.
This is Frankie Valli, and I think it's on the billboard. It still says Frankie Valli in Four Seasons.
I just want to thank you again for coming on. This is great, and your playing is just tasty.
Oh well.
And I really do mean that. And we'll have to have you come back and. We'll have to invite your friend Bob.
Sure.
And we'll have a guitar party here.
And can you say, like, where your cues are on TV or...
Sure. I mean, I write music for a company called Diamond Mine. Mm-hmm. And
along with John Pratt and Michael Alemania.
Yeah, exactly. And they've probably got about 30 shows that they're commissioned to write for regularly. So I've been... You'll hear my music a lot on... Dr. Phil, Rachel Ray, Entertainment Tonight, Insider Extra, The Doctors, The Talk, and some other newer shows that are coming up. I don't even recall. So,
always new ones coming
but,
up.
But yeah, mostly a lot of it's all usually CBS or whatever Channel 9 is here.
KHJ.
Yeah.
I think it's KHJ.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But
I think it's owned by Disney now.
Yeah.
Channel 9?
I think so. Not sure. So I might be wrong.
But those are the shows I write for regularly.
It's great stuff. And we're going to take ourselves out with Shopping Around, which has that country flavor. We'll hear that hee-haw influence. Do you remember the electric guitar? Was that your Anderson, or was that anything else, or did you borrow something?
Most of the stuff, because that was several years ago. That was probably, I don't remember how many years ago that was, but... That was my main guitar. Was my Anderson for decades. It's a 91.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 91 drop top, and so that was my main one. And it has the Buzz Featon tuning system. So that was the guitar that I had that played the most in tune of anything. It was always played great in tune.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was sort of my go-to for everything, because if I needed the guitar to be in tune, which of course you do when you record,
mm-hmm.
you know. with the Les Paul, I'd always have to fight with it. You know, I got to redo that tape.
Yeah, you got to temper it. Yeah.
Oh, well.
Anyway, no, thank you again. And Lori, as always, thank you for putting this whole thing together. And so this, you'll enjoy this clip. I'm going to play the whole clip. It's about a little over 2 minutes. But again, just listen to the tasty stuff that he's doing. It's just amazing what he's playing on here.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, too. We're definitely going to have you back on. This is not over yet. Oh. We're not done yet, buddy. No, I'm just anyway.
You can bring more guitars. Yes. You can bring acoustic next right. time, actually.
But right. I want to take a look at that Eric Clapton. I'm drooling already. I got to see that. Oh, 28. That's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you so much. This is called Shopping Around. Check this out. Everybody have a great weekend.
All right.